Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I think everybody has a right to do, you know, and I get it, but the national anthem means a lot to myself personally, an organization, or a football team. I hope, you know, again, I can't speak. I haven't really talked to our team about it. I would hope we don't have those issues. I understand there's a lot going on in the world. I like to just keep it here, you know, what we deal with. We try to deal with as a team in our closed environment. We talk about things, but hopefully that won't happen.
The national anthem is a special moment to me. It's a point of pride, but we also have to understand the other side, that people do have rights. We want to respect those. I was with the Jets a few weeks ago, and one of the players was there, and they said, you know, there's a time and a place. That's what we all have to sort of understand, the responsibility of doing it at the right time and in the right way. And what we see is a lot of our players going in the community and really taking the platform they have and being active and creating dialogue and actually making really positive change. And that's what I think is so important. Protest to progress is what I call it. And we all have to recognize that people want to see change. Let's go out and try to make that change happen in a peaceful and an important way.
Hit well, deep left. This baby is long gone. Out of the ballpark for Edwin Encarnacion. Embry fires, and Edwin hammers another one. Deep and gone. Edwin Encarnacion with a two-homer night.
Yes, he
got him to go. Devers was already headed back to the dugout before they appealed. 10 strikeouts for Trevor Bauer.
Gave up the 3 home runs, but 2 are to Devers, who, you know, you got a really good young hitter that's kind of in that zone right now. Other than that, he had a bunch of strikeouts, and he pounded the zone pretty good. You know, he kind of buckled down and really, really competed. You know, we always kind of say that when he's going, we have a different gear. Tonight's a good example. You know, last time we went into Minnesota is when he really got hot. That would really help us.
What a way to open this 2002 season. Bartolo Colon rocks into the motion, the 1-1. A swing and a chopper toward first. Foamer on a curveball, taps to Tomey, flips to Colon, and the shutout is complete. Bartolo Colon does not even need 100 pitches to throw a 5-hit shutout.
Colon looking for his first hit of the year.
He drives one deep left field. That goes Upton. Back near the wall. It's out of here. Bartolo has done it. The impossible has happened. Bartolo takes the long trot. His first career home run. This is one of the great moments in the history of baseball. Bartolo Colon has gone deep.
And Colon on 3 pitches makes quick work of Gallo.
Yes, sir.
Got him looking. 7 shutout innings for 44-year-old Bartolo Colon.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What an unbelievable treat that guy has been to baseball. And I don't care in what city he has played. I don't care what team he donned the cap of. I don't care who he is, or excuse me, where he has been, but who he is what has made so many fans over the last 20 years smile. He does not look like he should have lasted 20 years in baseball. He does not look like, talking about tonight's starter for the Minnesota Twins against the Indians, Bartolo Colon does not look like he really should have been lasted 20 years doing anything. Bartolo Colon is not, let me rephrase, does not have an athlete's body. Dude has a BMI of like 74%, as in 74% grease, fat, lard, whatever you want to call it. He is a rotund athlete. And yet here he is, defying all of the advice of virtually every athletic trainer ever, who says if you want to last in your sport, take good care of your body, make sure that you stay in peak physical condition, make sure... Tom Brady, there's an example. Now, admittedly, you have to be in a little bit of a different shape to play NFL quarterback than you do Major League Baseball starting pitcher. Tom Brady switched his diet in recent years to a plant-based diet. and he does remarkably important and difficult things regarding his own nutrition and his own health in order to stay at the top of his game at the age of 40, okay? He is incredibly fit, and if he wasn't, there's no way he'd be able to continue to do what he does, which is play like an MVP last year at 39. Bartolo Colon is 44, and I don't think he eats a plant-based diet. I think Bartolo Colon eats a pizza-based diet. He might eat himself a crab and some steak diet. He might eat himself a Funyuns and Doritos diet. He does not look like he eats a plant-based diet. In other words, his diet looks a lot more like mine than Tom Brady's, to be quite frank. And Bartolo Colon, what's he listed at, Cushlin?
Oh, geez.
What's Bartolo Colon's listed body weight?
Oh, his body weight?
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. Here, let me see. Let me find this one.
What did you think I was asking? He's 44 years old. I know he's, what his age is. He's 44 years old. But what is his listed body? He's 285.
Right.
Is what I've got
here. Yes, 5'11", 285 is what they're listing. Let's use that term loosely.
And if they'll admit to 285, then you damn well better believe it's at least 295.
Right.
I mean, hold on. Let me count for a second. One, two, three. Jim, you might want to go into commercial. It's going to take a while. I'm counting chins. No, I'm not trying to fat shame the guy. In all truthfulness, I am praising Bartolo Colon. There's no way a 5'11", 295-pound guy should still be pitching at the age of 44.
Not to mention throwing 7 shutout innings and a complete game in his last 2 starts.
Exactly. He got ran out of New York with the Mets because he was just, you know, awful. And then, you know, it's like he found a fountain of youth, full nacho cheese, and dove into it, drank deep from it, and bang, he came out of the other side with the Twins, going 6 1/3 3 starts ago, 8 hits, 3 runs allowed. That's a quality start. Going 9 innings, as you say, complete game, 9 hits, 4 runs allowed. That's a tremendous start and a victory. Then last week against Milwaukee, last Wednesday, going 7 innings, shutout baseball, 5 hits, struck out 5, walked only 1. Dude is just having himself a resurgence at 44. How many resurgences? Is that the plural of resurgence? How many resurgences? It's got to be. Has this guy had in his career? I'm just looking. He started this thing 20 years ago. 1997 with the Indians. He started 17 games, was 4-7 with a 5.65.
And the funny part is, if you look at some of those videos, if you could find them, what's really funny is you see the beginnings of the roundness that we have now. But relatively speaking, he looks so
the
much
rotundity.
Yes, exactly. but in those 97-98 videos, for example, that I was able to find. Boy, it almost doesn't even look like him.
No, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. I mean, just to throw it at you, he pitched for the Indians for 6 years, then to Montreal, then to the White Sox, then to the Angels, then to the Red Sox, then back to the White Sox, then to the Yankees, then to the A's, then to the Mets, then to the Twins, then to the Braves, and now here we are once again. Or I'm sorry, then to the Braves, then to the Twins. He got washed out by the Braves, not the Mets this year.
Yeah, he had an 8.14 ERA in his 13 Brave starts. That's what we all thought. Okay, it's finally over.
Correct. There you go. And in his starts with the Twins so far, again, we just ran down his last 3 have been his best, but his ERA is less than half that at 4.02. So just, wow, what a remarkable thing to see, and it'll be an awful lot of fun to watch. Just hopefully he gets shelled tonight and rocked. I guess shelled and rocked at the same time would be shocked by the Indians as they do look for their fifth straight victory. All right, so that's a little bit of fun and a tribute to Bartolo Colon. We'll talk more about him in a moment or two. I have a feeling he might come up in another one of our features on the day, but we have a lot of other things to get to. In the montage, you heard a little bit from Hugh Jackson, and you heard from the commissioner, Roger Goodell. As talk in the league at this stage heading into preseason week number 2, which is, you know, all kind of boring. I mean, yeah, there are position battles and those sorts of things, but for all intents and purposes, you know, this is a dog day kind of part of the summer as training camp you know, draws somewhere near a close. They obviously still have to get through three more preseason games. Only two of them they actually play. The fourth one is just all of the guys who are going to be the grocery baggers finish it out. And this is why the conversation in the National Football League now is going back to Colin Kaepernick, and it has been picked up by Marshawn Lynch, and it was picked up by Michael Bennett. As it pertains to sitting and kneeling and not respecting the national anthem and the United States flag, and by extension everything that it stands for, which, of course, is the big divisive point in the country. Hugh Jackson, you heard it in the montage, Hugh Jackson, head coach of the Browns, essentially said he doesn't want to see any of that mess during his team's games or before his team's games. He does not want, he knows everybody has a right, but he himself, who of course is a man of color, Hugh Jackson, said the national anthem means a lot to him personally, to the organization, and to the football team, and he really, really would like to just address it privately with his team. And he wants his team to understand that this means a lot to him, and it means a lot to the ownership, and it means a lot to the fan base, and they don't want any of this stuff distracting them from their mission. Here's a little bit more, again, from Hugh Jackson on this issue.
I think everybody has a right to do, you know, and I get it, but the national anthem means a lot to myself personally, our organization, our football team. I hope, you know, again, I can't speak. I haven't really talked to our team about it. I would hope we don't have those issues. I understand there's a lot going on in the world. I like to just keep it here, you know, what we deal with. We try to deal with as a team in our closed environment. We talk about things, but hopefully that won't happen.
Hopefully that won't happen. And I agree. Hopefully it doesn't happen for them. Hopefully it doesn't happen for the Lions. Hopefully it doesn't happen for any of the teams that you care about, because it's a mess. It creates a circus-like environment. It creates a divisiveness. It creates a distraction that no team wants going into a football season. Hell, haven't you figured it out? Between his declining level of play and that distraction, that circus atmosphere, it's one of the reasons why Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job. It's not hard to figure out. No wonder Hugh Jackson says, I don't want that mess happening here. But what about the boss? What about King Roger? King Roger Goodell. And I say that not in a mocking way, but Roger Goodell, of course, is the man in charge. Roger Goodell has spoken out about the anthem, has spoken out about players deciding to not respect it, to disrespect it and what it stands for. And he essentially said a whole lot of nothing. He said he works for the owner, so close enough, but he said what a commissioner you would expect to say, and that is something that isn't going to alienate people on either side. His goal is not to please one side of that debate or the other. His goal is to stay as neutral in it as possible so it doesn't cause problems for himself and his beloved shield.
The national anthem is a special moment to me. It's a point of pride. But we also have to understand the other side, that people do have rights. We want to respect those. I was with the Jets a few weeks ago, and one of the players was there, and they said, you know, there's a time and a place. That's what we all have to sort of understand, the responsibility of doing it the right time and in the right way. And what we see is a lot of our...
Actually, I'm gonna backtrack on my own statement there. And I actually took it from a headline, so maybe I'm going to condemn and criticize that statement from the headline. I don't think he said all nothing. I think he said something of substance there. He said, number one, that it is a source of pride for him, but he also sees the other side. I don't know exactly what the other side about being proud of the country in which you live is. The greatest country on earth, where people of all ethnicities and races have the greatest opportunities than they do and they would anywhere on this planet. There is no other country, and I don't want to get all political, but there is no other country in Europe, in Asia, South America, or anywhere else where people of every denomination, ethnic and otherwise, have access to the dream that has become to be known as the American dream, where you can achieve and learn and grow and earn as much as you would like to, based on your own work ethic and your own family's environment and the choices that they make. It's a wonderful country. Roger Goodell said, I'm proud of this country. But he understands the other side. I guess that means people aren't proud of the country. I don't understand that personally, but I get what he's saying. Then he said, talking to the Jets, that there is another side, there is a time and a place for this. And that's the other part that I think is very accurate.
One of the players was there, and they said, you know, there's a time and a place. That's what we all have to sort of understand, the responsibility of doing it the right time and in the right way. And what we see...
I think that's fair to say. I really do. And prior to the start of a football game, when 60,000 people are rising up, removing their hats, and listening to a rendition of the national anthem, if not singing along to it with their hands over their hearts... That's not the time and place to say, yeah, I'm not a big fan of that flag. I'm not a big fan of this country. That's the wrong time and the wrong place. Especially when you're about to start a game that's going to pay you probably more money in that game than most people will make in a year. It's kind of probably not the right place. Continue, Mr. Commissioner.
There's a lot of our players going in the community and really taking the platform they have and being active and creating dialogue and actually making really positive change.
Wow. How about that? Now, that is what we're talking about. And you want to know why? You want to know why that matters? Why I think what Roger Goodell said there means something? Because that's how it's supposed to be. Who's going to show up at an event in the community when an NFL player wants to make an appearance to talk about social activism, political opinions, etc.? Only the people who are interested. And then you know what you have? A positive event. You know what you have when you force those viewpoints on people who came there for something different? They came there for a football game, not to have your... contrarian opinion about the military, the police, the flag, whatever, the anthem, foisted upon them, that's when you have a negative event. That's one of the reasons why we see what we see and we hear what we hear. I think Roger Goodell makes a good point there. A lot of players go out into the community and they're active there, and that's the place to do that sort of thing. I have no problem with that at all.
And that's what I think is so important. Protest to progress is what I call it. And we all have to recognize that people want to see change. Let's go out and try to make that change happen in a peaceful and an important way.
In a peaceful and an important way, and not at a place where that particular kind of activism is not necessarily going to be appreciated by a large, large majority of your fan base. I think that's a very, very fair point. Now, a lot of people are going to make other very fair points about Marshawn Lynch sitting down on a Gatorade tub eating bananas during the, I think he was eating a banana. I couldn't quite see the image. It was a very quick video. But he's sitting there, and which is a good thing to do. A lot of guys eat bananas for potassium before games. No problem with that. But to sit there and just kind of have a snack while the anthem is playing and everybody else is standing is a clear sign of, hey, I'm making a statement here without saying any words, because remember, it's Marshawn Lynch and he's only here so he doesn't get fined. We all remember the Super Bowl mantra. It's the only reason he spoke to the media is because he had to, so he wouldn't get fined. So he doesn't have to speak about his protest. But sitting there eating is, quite obviously a statement in and of itself. He's got a point to make and he's fine. It's fine for him to make it. I would like for him to explain it, but he's obviously not a guy who's very comfortable doing that. Michael Bennett did make some statements. He said his decision of the Seahawks, he said his decision was driven largely by the events on Saturday in Charlottesville, which I will not discuss on this sports program. There's a time and place for that, too. This isn't it. I'm going to try to limit my conversation on this particular matter to the sports side of this. At a football game, is that the place for people to be taking these kinds of positions and making these kinds of stands? Roger Goodell says there is a time and a place to be active if you feel like you want to be heard on a given situation, but before a game is probably not the best one. People have rights. He's not going to take away people's rights, but he is going to encourage, by statements like that, people to make good decisions. Interested, of course, as always, in your thoughts on that matter, and I will take them at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We'll put you up and on the radio. If you would like to tweet thoughts to us, you can do so at Sports Radio 106.5, Sports Radio 106.5. And you can also make Facebook comments at 106.5 The Ticket, 106.5 The Ticket. So everybody's got an opinion on where that stands now. Colin Kaepernick still doesn't have a job. Thad Lewis, the latest acquisition as a quarterback by a team that may have considered Colin Kaepernick. Thad Lewis, the former Brown, is now a Baltimore Raven. Colin Kaepernick is not. Does that mean owner Steve Bisciotti overruled Ozzie Newsome and John Harbaugh? Depends on who you ask. They say no. This is an organizational decision, but we'll see if they continue to share the same message. What does it mean? I will tell you what I think it means, what I've said many, many times. Colin Kaepernick is not going to return to the National Football League unless it's as a starter. Somebody's starter goes down and they need an actual starter the way they did with Cutler going to Miami to replace Ryan Tannehill. He's not going on anybody's team as a backup. Colin Kaepernick is not going to accept a job on anybody's team as a backup for the kind of money that he wants. Nobody's going to pay him what he's going to want to be a backup. And quite frankly, again, in the risk versus reward category, no owner or general manager is going to want the circus in town for a backup quarterback. They may be willing to deal with the atmosphere of division and distraction for a starting quarterback, especially if he can play, especially if he can throw, especially if he can complete passes and produce. They're not going to be willing to do that for a backup quarterback. So that's where it is with Colin Kaepernick. If you've got thoughts on it, we will take them. And, of course, like I said, Marshawn Lynch and Michael Bennett. I agree with the commissioner. There's a time and a place. I agree with Hugh Jackson. There's a time and a place. I think it's a pretty consistent message that a lot of people from various points of view are getting to. An African-American coach, a white commissioner, both kind of saying the same thing. We don't need that mess at the start of games. You want to make these kinds of social statements. Do it in the community. Do it in the off season. Do it on your off days. Do it someplace else. But when it comes time for the game, let's not distract from the mission at hand. And I think that is something that is fair to ask. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We'll try to get to some of your phone calls after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, which is coming up after we tell you about our stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
This one is an easy one for us, I think. The Wild Stat of the Day, the number one. As in, there is just one active Major League player who can say, I played for the Montreal Expos. Just one guy left since the Expos disbanded. And that, of course, is tonight's twin starter, going against his original team, the Indians, 44-year-old Bartolo Colon in his 21st season. You know, we keep saying 20 years, Jim, but his rookie year was 1997.
Right.
That means 2016 was his 20th year.
Right.
This starts his 21st year. So that's how long this guy has been in the big leagues. Only Bartolo Colon can say he once played for the Montreal Expos. And that is your Buffalo Wild Wings stat of the day. Okay, coming up, we're going to take some phone calls. We're going to talk about the National Football League. We'll talk about the Kaepernick story. But we've also got some very interesting baseball discussions to have as well. And how about the latest in the National Basketball Association as it pertains to your Cavaliers, if you happen to be a fan of the wine and gold? Maybe the reason Kyrie Irving isn't on a new team yet is because the Cavaliers are still waiting on LeBron James to decide what he's going to do long term. Very interesting story to share with you there from CBS Sports. We'll tell you all about that and get your opinion on it if you like. 866-240-1065. Coming right back on The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling onward at 3:37. Thanks for being with us. Right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Do you like to get your Mexican on? I love me a good steak burrito. And I'm not talking about Americanized Mexican food. I'm talking about real, legitimate, authentic Mexican food. The kind you get at Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. And the brand new location, now at the Franklin Park Mall. Brand new inside everything. The bar, the booths, the tables, the chairs. It's all brand new with a tremendous atmosphere and an authentic Mexican feel. Plus a great comfy lounge to kick back, have a few drinks before sitting down for dinner. Take advantage of happy hour, which happens, hold on, let me check the schedule. Every single day. From 3 to 6 p.m. So, in other words, it's going on right now. So get to, and they have insane drink specials, too. Just get yourself to the Don Juan Mexican Bar Grill during a happy hour. Have some tremendous drink specials. Also, today's Tuesday. Holy cow. Taco Tuesday. Tacos are just a buck at Don Juan on Tuesdays. And don't forget the original location is in Maumee on Dussel Drive. But the new location is at Franklin Park. It's on the Monroe Street side. You got to enter from the outside. It's not through the food court. All right? It's between JCPenney and Dillard's, directly across from Nick and Jimmy's. The new location for the Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill, now at the Franklin Park Mall. All right, let's go to some phone calls. 866-240-1065. You have some thoughts on Roger Goodell, who said, you know what, everybody has rights. There's a time and a place to make the right decisions, and maybe before games on the national anthem, not necessarily the best time and place. Let's go to Dave, who's calling in Toledo, wants to talk about this right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Dave, thanks for the call, my man. Go right ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to make a couple of comments about the Colin Kaepernick thing.
Sure.
I first want to say I'm a 21-year veteran.
What branch?
Hired, Air Force.
God bless you, my friend. Thank you for your service to this country.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I got two sons that served in the Marine Corps, both served in Iraq.
Then we are very thankful for your family. I'm sorry. I just like to get that out. We are very thankful for your family. Go ahead.
All right. Having said that, when this whole Colin Kaepernick thing happened, my sons, you know, being avid sports fans and stuff, we discussed this kind of at length. Mm-hmm. And I think we have kind of, at least I do, have a kind of a different take on it. I'm not particularly offended by it, because the thing that really came to mind when I first saw it was, there are many countries in this world where if he had done what he did, he would have been arrested. But because he's able to do that, and even though I can disagree with it on so many levels we can't even count, and it's not something I would ever do, I would go over there and stand next to him while he's kneeling and protect his right to do it. And I think that's what we need to keep in mind.
I think what you're saying is 100% true, and I know so many veterans who would say the same thing. And you know what else? I know a lot of police officers who would protect his right to wear those socks of police officers that look like pigs, those very insulting things. And that is precisely why there are so many fans, so many millions of NFL fans who are – they have the opposite viewpoint as you. They know you would protect him. They know police officers would protect him. And it's because he's not going to be arrested in this country where he would in so many around the world for such seditious types of messages. It's exactly why we are so hurt and so angry that he would not recognize it as such and say, you know what?
Yep.
This country isn't perfect, but my God, whether you're a minority, whether you're a sexual, whether it be an ethnic minority, sexual orientation, gender, whatever, that we have it pretty damn good here in the United States. We don't get locked up for these kinds of things in the United States. And maybe, just maybe, I should recognize that and not insult the flag, the anthem, and all of the people who stand up and recognize it.
You're right. And I can think the guy's a bonehead for doing what he does. Right. But, you know, I mean, any cop would tell you, because I've been there also. I also did that for a short period of time. You can be out there guarding at a protest rally for whatever cause that you may have absolutely no agreement with, but you're still charged with protecting those people out there exercising their constitutional rights. It isn't a requirement we agree with people to protect them. That's kind of what makes us different. Imagine kneeling for the anthem.
This is such a bizarre conversation, Dave, because what you're describing is why so many of us, probably 99% of us, or maybe less than that, I don't know, but it's hard for me to understand the other side of this. It's why we respect you, and whether it be as a police officer or as a military veteran or an active duty military personnel, because of that, you will protect. I mean, you know who I think are some of the greatest people in the world? When some of the protests that have happened around the country in the last couple of years have included Black Lives Matter protesters chanting the phrases, what do we want dead cops and when do we want them now? And pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. These just horrifically terrible, vile messages about wanting dead police officers. And you know, as they marched, who marched in front of them and beside them and stood and created a barrier for them? Cops defending their right to call for their very deaths. That's the thing that's so frustrating. So for people on the outside like me, I'm looking at them and saying, you are the salt of the earth. You're standing there going to protect these people so that no violence has befallen on them, even as they call for your deaths. And to me, that's one of the reasons why, like I said, I think, you know, a lot of NFL fans have made it very clear to their owners and their clubs, you know what, we don't want that mess coming to our sidelines, into our cities.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with that point of it, and I see it. But, you know, when I see images of that, I think to myself, if Colin Kaepernick was North Korean and did what he did in North Korea, he'd be in jail. So I think when I see him able to do that, whether I agree with it or not, and I don't, I want to make that clear.
I understand.
The fact that he's not in jail tells me, you know what, we've been doing something right for a whole long time.
And you know, you use North Korea because maybe it's you know, it's the story of the day right now as far as the tensions and everything else. But I'll go to Cuba only because, again, you know, his decision to wear the Malcolm X T-shirt, which compared and showed Malcolm X with Fidel Castro in a positive light. If he was in Castro's Cuba doing those things we just described, he'd be in one of Castro's dungeons. So would his family, just for being associated with him. And that's why, again, a lot of people just cannot take this, because they're like, wait a minute, you don't even know what you're protesting for or against. You're saying you're against oppression, and yet here you are wearing a shirt glorifying somebody who would oppress you for doing exactly this if you were in his country.
Yep. My only advice to people, though, before you get upset, just try to keep in mind, they're exercising the very privilege that we've worked for and paid for. And whether we agree with it or not, that's the perspective I try to keep. And it helps me keep my sanity when I see idiots like that, too.
Well, you know what? That's great advice. And I'm glad you do it. And I'm glad your sons do it. And I think it's a great message to send other people, too. Dave, thanks so much for the call, my friend. I appreciate it. All right, there's Dave in Toledo with a great point. You know, and I want to point that out, too. There are so many people who defend the rights of people like Colin. And Kaepernick, to me, is the worst of the bunch for this reason. You know, there are other people who have decided to follow him and join his lead, or follow his lead and join him in sitting for the anthem, or kneeling for the anthem, or whatever, that started last year. What makes him the most egregious offender is his complete lack of devotion to the message that he thinks he stands for. And when I say stands, that's metaphorically, of course. Not literally. He doesn't stand. That's the point. His lack of devotion to and understanding of exactly what he's doing. This is what upsets a lot of people. Number one, everything that the last caller just said is true. There are military members who would give their lives to protect his right to disrespect them. There are police officers who would give their lives to protect his right to disrespect them. And for that reason, so many of us support those military and those police officers, and we say stand up and salute the flag that they represent and that represents them. They are the protectors and the guardians of our very liberty. Right? Colin Kaepernick doesn't see the hypocrisy of it. He doesn't understand what the caller just said, that these guys would defend me as I do this about them. Maybe that is proof enough that I should show a little bit of respect here. But it goes further than that. This particular guy gave many, many statements about the leadership of this country and about how the elected officials in this country have created, you know, a criminal justice system that he says is biased against minorities, and a criminal justice system that is inherently and systemically racist. Well, what do you do when you find something about your government that you find particularly appalling? What do you do? What is the one thing that our founding fathers, in their wisdom, gave us all the opportunity to do? They gave us the opportunity to vote those offenders out. Vote them out and vote in somebody who will do what we want them to do, whatever that may be. Colin Kaepernick's idea of who he'd like to vote for might be different than yours or mine, might be the same as somebody else's, but that's exactly what the whole thing is how the whole thing is set up. And so when he complains about the system and the elected officials who run it, and then admits on national television that he doesn't vote, he forfeits any and all credibility on the issue. You want to make change, but you refuse to do what you are allowed to do in this country to change the government. You refuse to vote and make that change. Think about that for a moment. Think you're going to make anything change by sitting down on a Gatorade cooler during the anthem? Or going out there and being active in presidential or in congressional and city council and, hell, dog catcher elections in your local community and vote? Get other people to go out there and vote your way. Convince them. That's what democracy is all about. He didn't even do it. And then, as I said, with Castro, going, you know, wearing to press conferences before his team goes to Miami, which has a 34% Cuban-American population, and wearing a T-shirt that honors Castro by way of Malcolm X. Castro, a leader whose country would have locked him, Colin Kaepernick, up for doing anything that challenges the government, like he's doing here in the United States, freely and without punishment. The utter ignorance and stupidity of the man just shine through, brighter than a thousand suns. And then, as I said before about the socks, the police socks, depicting them as pigs, posting on Instagram pictures of 18th century and 17th century slave catcher patrol badges and posting them next to police badges as if to equate the two things together. Talk about the height of offensiveness. Talk about the most disgusting, vile message you can send, even as those very police officers stand outside your stadium and protect you. Stand outside your practice facility and protect you. Stand outside your hotel on the road and protect you. Stand or drive alongside your motorcade, your caravan, from the airport to the next stadium of the road game to protect you. These individuals are going to protect you, and you're going to call them slave catchers and pigs. It's that type of hypocrisy that drives a lot of people nuts. Now, the beauty of that whole story, as the last caller pointed out, is that despite all of the above, he still has the freedom to do it. And you know what else he has? The freedom to work in the National Football League. Just as I have the freedom to work for any number of radio stations. Hell, if I want to go back to school and become a computer programmer, I have the freedom to go to work for Apple and Microsoft. Now, Apple and Microsoft don't have to hire me. Neither does another radio station. They have to decide whether or not what I do and how well I do it is worth any baggage that I might bring. Same thing for you. They have to decide, every employer has to decide whether they want this person because of their skill set and whether or not it is good enough for them to justify bringing in the baggage that comes along with it. And at this particular point in time, 32 owners have not gotten together and colluded, which is illegal, and say, you know what, let's none of us do it, okay? Let's all of us just block him out. That is absolutely 100% illegal and would lead to a multi-billion dollar lawsuit by the NFLPA on behalf of Colin Kaepernick against the league, the league's owners. They don't have to do that because 32 owners have decided on their own. They're listening to their fan base. And they're listening to them saying, you know what? We don't want this. We don't want this for somebody who is marginal as far as what he can offer us anyway. No, let's not do this. And lastly, I would submit to you what I've been saying for a long time now. All of the above would be rendered moot if he was just a better player. From a football standpoint, Colin Kaepernick isn't the passer that Drew Brees is, the passer that Tom Brady is, the passer that Aaron Rodgers is, the passer that Phillip Rivers is, the passer that Andrew Luck is, the passer that Matt Ryan is, the passer that Matthew Stafford is, the passer that Derek Carr is. Because if he was as good as any of the players mentioned above, he would be on a roster right now as the starting quarterback for some team who would decide, we'll deal with the fans who are angry. We'll deal with anybody who's upset about our guy because he's going to win us football games. At the end of the day, after all of the shouting and all of the politicking and all of the social activism and all of the arguing and debating, at the end of the day, if he's a better football player, he'd have a job. Robin Toledo, you're on AM, or you're on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Hey, Robert, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm all right. How about you?
I'm good. What's on your mind? What do you think?
Well, I guess I'm not going to say I disagree with you 100% on things Kaepernick has done and said, but I can't help but feeling you're telling a very one-sided story.
Okay, well, tell me the other side
of
your
seat. I think that's part of the problem with this whole conversation is there's a substantial amount of validity to his concerns. I don't think he's going about addressing them properly. I think wearing socks with pigs with police hats on them is disgusting. But to completely dismiss that there is no race problem in this country, that he's completely coming out of left field, that he should be grateful for how this country treats him because he would be getting worse somewhere else. Well, if you're not getting treated right, you're not getting treated right. And just to say you'd be treated worse somewhere else isn't an excuse to not treat somebody right.
I don't think I've heard anybody say that that there is an excuse to not treat somebody right. But I also think, But I also think that Colin Kaepernick, through his own comments, and through which have been very limited, of course, this year since he's looking for a job, but last year when he was giving press conferences on the matter, I also think he was telling a very one-sided story. As a matter of fact, not even a one-sided, it's kind of a half-sided story because he didn't even tell the full truth about the side on which he sits. There is a lot of conversation to be held there, and to have that conversation, like Roger Goodell said, like Hugh Jackson said, like a number of other people have said. I heard Rob Ryan today, the former defensive coordinator, say he's got a lot of sympathy for a lot of these things. Let's have these discussions in the right time and place, not, you know, before a football game.
Yeah, but I've heard you repeatedly say that he should be grateful to be here and that these cops are protecting him, so he should be grateful to have these cops protect him. Well, if cops aren't treating black people right,
I'm sorry?
Then he shouldn't just blanketly say, okay, all cops are great. I shouldn't be upset about the way cops treat people.
Well, first of all, I don't think anybody said, first of all, Rob, I don't think anybody said all cops are great. And second of all, statistically, he's wrong. Okay? He's just flat out wrong.
Police officers
do not mistreat minorities in the United States at a disproportionate level to the rest of the population.
What percent of the country is black?
13%.
What percent of people who are shot by cops are black?
That is a completely out-of-context question that requires a very detailed answer that I could give you, statistically speaking, in about a half an hour because I study it.
I'll tell you, it's twice as many.
No,
now, that leads to two possible conclusions. One, either black people are disproportionately causing themselves to be shot by cops.
Bingo.
Or two, you just said, I guess you have...
I could cite you statistics that would honestly take a half an hour to do, seriously. That prove that
I've studied it myself too.
Okay.
I know exactly. So
okay, well, you answered your own question
your opinion,
there when you gave.
Black people are more likely to be shot by cops because black people do things wrong more often.
Because statistically speaking, according to the federal government, not according to some.
And you've just
proven
exactly
host,
what my problem is with your. You believe that black people do wrong things more often than white people.
No, it's not what I believe. It's what the federal statistics show. Okay, that there is a far, 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 far higher majority, a disproportionate majority. You got to let me talk, Rob.
A black person and a white person get charged with the same crime. The white person does less time.
Rob, now you're changing the subject because you don't like the direction that the answer is going.
That's a
bad way to debate.
Not changing it. Oh well, you already tried to cut me off once in this debate and say I can't answer whether or not. Black people are twice as well. You admit it right off the bat. You know, black people are twice as likely to be shot by police.
Okay, are you still here? Because I don't think you got cut off. I think we're having a conversation here, and I've made you allowed to make your points, and then you asked a question, and I started to give you an answer, and then you kept talking to cut me off. So I don't think you can accuse me of cutting anybody off here, Rob. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Well, then you didn't get cut off, so I think we can go ahead and put that to bed. The fact of the matter is, statistically speaking, it's not about what I believe or you believe or what Colin Kaepernick believes. That statistically speaking, the vast majority, and I mean an overwhelming majority of violent crimes, upwards of 60% of violent crimes in this country are committed by roughly 13% of the population. That sort of criminal activity is going to lead to far more violent interactions with police officers, which is then going to lead to far more uses of force from police officers. That, in no way, shape, or form, Rob, no way, shape, or form indicates that police officers are therefore targeting or treating one particular segment of the population or mistreating that segment of the population based on its race. There are facts here that people like Colin Kaepernick want nothing to do with, and that's one of the reasons why, in my mind, if Colin Kaepernick wants to make a case, he can do it. Get on a stage. get on a stage, have a discussion, have a debate with somebody in law enforcement, get on a stage with somebody in the Department of Justice who can present the FBI's criminal statistics from the last 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, as far back as you want to go, and then we'll see why it is that police officers have more engagements and interactions with minorities. And then maybe a little kind of become a little bit clearer that these cops who would die to protect Colin Kaepernick's right to protest them, why they're not the evil that he represents them to be on his socks. Is that a fair way to say that?
Well, see, when you're lumping them all together again. You keep saying these cops, and I'll admit that's his biggest problem is he's lumping them all together too. Yeah. But you lump everything he's doing together as bad and wrong, and that there's no validity to it.
No, I don't think you heard that at all. I don't think you heard that at all. I said Colin Kaepernick can make his case on a stage. He can make his case on a stage. He's not going to do it on the sideline.
He's being dismissive to cops and he's being dismissive to the military. He specifically went to an ex-military person on his team and said, "I don't want to disrespect you. If I take a knee instead of sitting, would you see that as a sign of disrespectful still?" And he said, "I don't see that as disrespecting me. No." So that's a great anecdotal story.
That's a great anecdotal story of one person.
But you don't bring that up.
No. Listen, and you know
and
what?
You don't bring
him
up the money he's donated to charities either.
Good for him for doing that. But again, and Rob, thanks for the call. I appreciate the discussion. I got to get to the top of the hour. Here's the thing. Good for him for talking to a teammate who is in the military or whatever you just said. And if that person said, "No, it doesn't bother me," that's a great anecdotal story. But guess what? There are hundreds of thousands of active military, and millions of military veterans who might give a very different answer. And more importantly, millions of civilians who rely on those military veterans and those police officers for the protection that they enjoy in the United States that gives them the liberty and gives Colin the liberty to make false statements, to portray police and military and the flag as being something horrible and something that he doesn't want to stand up for. It's what gives them the liberty to do that. And that's the reason why I think you see people of all colors at all different parts of the National Football League coming together and agreeing that, you know what? There's a time and a place for this. You want to make a case? Make a case when you are at an event. If you're doing something for charity, you said he gives to charity. Make a case that something you're doing for charity. Make a case at a press conference, at a debate, at a college. Make statements. Present your own statistics. If you've got statistics that refute the statistics of the federal government through the last several decades, multiple administrations of president, multiple departments of justice, going down to the local level, statistics in all of the urban communities, which are highly populated by minorities in Chicago or New York or in Oakland or in San Francisco or in Washington, D.C. or in Detroit, make those arguments. There's a great place for that. But you know what that place isn't? That place isn't on the sideline while people are playing the national anthem or singing the national anthem, which celebrates the liberty that you enjoy to do that. More coming up in hour number two. Great call, Ron, by the way. Great call. And I'm glad that you now realize you did not get cut off. We had a very good conversation, and that's the kind of debate I enjoy. More coming up right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I think everybody has a right to do, you know, and I get it, but the national anthem means a lot to myself personally, an organization, or football team. I hope, you know, again, I can't speak. I haven't really talked to our team about it. I would hope we don't have those issues. I understand there's a lot going on in the world. I like to just keep it here, you know, what we deal with. We try to deal with as a team in our closed environment. We talk about things, but hopefully that won't happen.
The national anthem is a special moment to me. It's a point of pride. But we also have to understand the other side, that people do have rights. We want to respect those. I was with the Jets a few weeks ago, and one of the players was there, and they said, you know, there's a time and a place. That's what we all have to sort of understand, the responsibility of doing it at the right time and in the right way. And what we see is a lot of our players going in the community and really taking the platform they have and being active and creating dialogue and actually making really positive change. And that's what I think is so important. Protest to progress is what I call it. And we all have to recognize that people want to see change. Let's go out and try to make that change happen in a peaceful and an important way.
Hit well, deep left. X-Baby is long gone. Out of the ball. Park for Edwin Encarnacion. Embry fires, and Edwin hammers another one. Deep and goal. Edwin Encarnacion with a two-homer night.
Yes, he
got him to go. Devers was already headed back to the dugout before they appealed. 10 strikeouts for Trevor Bauer.
Gave up the 3 home runs, but 2 were to Devers, who, you know, you got a really good young hitter that's kind of in that zone right now. Other than that, he had a bunch of strikeouts, and he pounded the zone pretty good. You know, he kind of buckled down and really, really competed. You know, we always kind of say that when he's going, we have a different gear. Tonight's a good example. And last time we went into Minnesota is when he really got hot. That would really help us.
What a way to open this 2002 season. Bartolo Colon rocks into the motion, the 1-1. A swing and a chopper toward first. Fulmer on a curveball, taps to Tomey, flips to Colon, and the shutout is complete. Bartolo Colon does not even need 100 pitches to throw a 5-hit shutout.
Colon looking for his first hit of the year.
Oh. He drives one deep left field. That goes Upton back near the wall. It's out of here. Bartolo has done it. The impossible has happened. Bartolo takes the long trot. His first career home run. This is one of the great moments in the history of baseball. Bartolo Colon has gone deep.
And Colon on 3 pitches makes quick work of Gallo.
Yes, sir.
Got him looking. 7 shutout innings for 44-year-old Bartolo Colon.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. We roll on into hour number 2 at 4:11. Thanks so much for spending the time with us. How about that Bartolo Colon statistic that we gave? Only one active player in Major League Baseball can now say, this is our Buffalo Wild Wings stat of the day. Wild stat of the day. Only one active player in baseball can once say they were a Montreal Expo. When did the Expos leave Montreal?
2004 was their last season in Montreal.
And at that time, Bartolo Colon was an 8-year veteran.
And he was already off of the Expos by then, too, because he was only there for that half a year.
That's exactly right. That's kind of hilarious. I just love the story. Why is he... Let me ask you something, and this is no joke. We talked about this a little bit at the top of the show, Kush.
Okay.
About Bartolo Colon, you know, joking about counting his chins. He is a very, very rotund guy. He does not look like he puts a lot of time in on the treadmill. Doesn't look like he eats a plant-based diet a la Tom Brady. Doesn't look like he works out 18 hours a day a la James Harrison. And I'm naming other older players who continue to thrive and do phenomenal things. He's just the opposite. I mean, he looks like he is on the straight-up McD's 30-day, what was that movie called? Super Size Me.
Yes, yeah, thank you. Yeah,
he looks like he's been eating McDonald's 30 days at a time, Super Size Me style, for 20 years.
Right.
He's listed at 285, and if they'll give him that, then you know it's probably more like 295.
Right.
But I'm wondering, why is he so beloved? And I mean literally in all those cities that I named where he's played, Cleveland, Montreal, Chicago, Anaheim / Los Angeles, Boston, Chicago again, New York, Oakland, New York, Atlanta, Minnesota.
And don't forget, through all this, you know, especially at the level you're going, don't forget back in 2012 when he was at Oakland A, he got a 50-game suspension for testing testosterone positives.
That's right, for PEDs. Yeah. The guy looks like he does nothing to PEDs. He doesn't look like he performance-enhancing drug. He doesn't look like he does anything to enhance his performance via drugs.
Right.
He enhances his performance via milkshakes. I mean, that's just the way that it looks. Do you think, as I talk about his weight in a kind of a jokingly mocking manner, one of the reasons we all love him, and I do, is he's, you know, the jolly fat guy. You know what I mean by the jolly fat guy? Do you remember... I mean, we could sit here and run through TV shows where everybody loves. It's like Santa. Why people love you know the bowl full of jelly. They get shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. Everybody's favorite character from What's Happening was Rerun. And you might be too young to remember Rerun.
I do actually have vague memories of that. Yeah.
Do you? Okay.
Oh yeah.
Do you know
I haven't watched
them
in a while, but I do remember
about the
it.
Rotund. Everybody thinks that if you're fat, you're jolly. If you're heavy, you're always in a good mood. It's just kind of a thing. I think people love him because he's the lovable fat guy. And that's one of the reasons why everybody loves him. I'm mesmerized that Tom Brady is still going after 20 years in the NFL at the age of 40. I'm mesmerized at what he's doing. I'm mesmerized that David Ortiz did what he did until he was 40. Last year, mashing, 38 home runs at the age of 40 for crying out loud, 39, 40. I'm amazed by that. I'm amazed by James Harrison. How old is Harrison now? James Harrison is one of my, you know, despite being a Steeler, he's one of my all-time favorite guys. He's 39. James Harrison is 39. And he is still going strong. He is still an extraordinary force on the Steelers' defense. He had that little hiccup mistake that he went to Cincinnati, we all recall. He's 39, and he is probably as fit as any 22-year-old rookie coming into the league right now. He works out like a demon. He is an absolute beast, and I love his work ethic. I love his mentality. These guys take care of themselves, and they have to. Bartolo Colon's 44. He's older than any of them, and he looks like he eats pizza in his sleep, and he's still doing his thing. How? There's got to be a reason for that. There's got to be a reason that makes him so lovable.
Yeah.
Because he's like the rest of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't eat a plant-based diet a la Tom Brady. I don't work out like a physical freak a la James Harrison. I let it go. I sometimes just let it all hang out. You know what? I'm gaining weight, and I don't care. I'm going to be a fat guy for a while. And then maybe, just maybe, you go on a diet and work out, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's why people can relate to Bartolo Colon. He's one of us. He's not the aspirational athlete. You know, LeBron James, you can't be, right? You can't be. Hard as you want, much as you want, hard as you try, you can't be 6'8 and 270 with a body fat of like 0.4%. You can't be LeBron James physically. You can't be James Harrison physically, quite honestly. But you know what you can be? You can be 5'11 and 295.
Right.
Bartolo Colon, he's the superstar or the longtime star for the rest of us. That's why we relate to him, I think. And that's why, you know, I just love the story, and I hope he's still pitching when he's Julio Franco's age. How long did Julio Franco play?
I know he said 49? He's the one who specifically one time said that if somebody will sign me to a contract, I will play at 50. Now, that obviously didn't happen, as I'm quickly looking up what his last year was. But his last year actually was 2007, which would have been his age 48 season. And just like Bartolo Colon, he spent some of those last days with the Mets, too.
And oh, by the way, at the age of 48, he played, 95 on 110 games. It wasn't like a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
He played 110 games with three different teams. He started out with, who did he start out with?
According,
oh, no, I beg your pardon.
According to this,
pardon.
He started out 61 games.
He played 55 games.
55, yeah, 40 with the Mets, 15 with the Braves that year. Still
correct.
Got over 100 at-bats.
Yeah, I was adding up the total to that. So, so at age 48, he still played 55 games, got over 100 at-bats. And by the way, hit above the Mendoza line at 222.
Yes.
I don't know how much bat speed he lost when he turned from 47 to 48. But it was considerable because when he was 47, oh, by the way, in 95 games with the Mets, he hit 273 at age 40 freaking seven.
Too shabby.
I love guys like that.
Oh, hell yeah. There's only about one other guy in any of the sports that I could think that actually did some things in their sport at that age, and local and Red Wings fans will know who exactly where I'm going with this, Gordie Howe.
Of course. You know, and he did some things, like you said. Now, in the National Football League, prior to, well, I don't know, I'm trying to remember, we talked about this before, Warren Moon played into his 40s, was not at the level that Tom Brady is now at 40. George Blanda played well into his 40s, but that was mostly as a kicker.
Right.
So it's kind of as a part-time player.
I know really something similar to this came up in the last week, and the answer was Vinny Testaverde.
Testaverde, I think, played more games, had more starts after the age of 40
than anybody else. That was it. That came up last week when we were talking about Brady hitting 40.
Yeah, that was the Testaverde part of this. But anyway. Julio Franco played to 48 and at 47, as I said, hit 273. I mean, was I don't want to say could have been an all-star, but he could have been an all-star.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have seen all-stars have worse batting averages than that. And now Bartolo Colon is throwing complete games two games ago, seven-inning shutouts last game, and we'll see what he does against the Indians
and one
tonight.
Real...
I just love this story.
Oh,
and if
yeah.
it wasn't against the Indians tonight, I wish he'd throw a no-hitter.
And just to throw it out there, because I mentioned his name, Gordie Howe, his yeah. last season in the NHL was with Hartford in 79-80. He was age 51, and he still played 80 games, 15 goals, 26 assists, 41 points at the age of 51.
Wow, that's amazing. That is simply amazing.
I could barely skate at age 10 or age 30-something, and he was shooting and scoring goals at age 51. Unreal.
You know, just to finish it up here, because I want to get back to the anthem discussion and the Colin Kaepernick discussion and more. What's really interesting, like I said, Bartolo is kind of like the star for the rest of us. You know, he's like Festivus for the rest of us. He's the guy that, you know, like that's kind of it's kind of the Steph Curry story, different level. But like I said, you can't be LeBron James because you can't just make yourself grow to 6'8 and 270,
right?
Chiseled muscle and pure speed and athleticism. You can't do that no matter how hard you try. But you know what you can be? You can be 6'2, 6'3. And you don't have to be jumping out of the gym. And you don't have to be chiseled. He's 6'3", baby face, skinny, spindly arms, and just made himself a great shooter. Just practiced and practiced and practiced and became one of the greatest shooters in the history of the world. And that's one of the reasons why people are drawn to Steph Curry. I can relate to Steph Curry as much as I don't like him. I can relate to wanting to be like him because I could. I am 6'3", for the record. I'm a little bit heavier than he is. Never made myself as great of a shooter as he is. But I could do that. You know, I mean, theoretically, you could do that. I could do that. I can't become Kevin Durant, 6'11", with a wingspan, 7'6". I can't make that happen. I can't be Michael Jordan, even, at 6'6", and be able to have the natural springs to jump out of the gym. But I could be Steph Curry. He's not a great leaper. He's not a fast guy. He's not an ultra-quick guy. He's a great dribbler, and he's a great shooter. Two things that you can practice until your arms fall off. That's why we like people like that. I don't like Steph Curry because I don't like his attitude and I don't like the fact that he plays for the Warriors, but I like that about him. And that's why I like Bartolo Colon, because I could be that.
Are you?
I might not have that hose hanging off of my right arm the way he does and be able to throw it 99 mm-hmm. when I was, you know, 22 and still be able to throw it, you know, 91 or 90 or whatever he's doing now at age 44. Might not have that, but you know what? Again, this isn't a guy that represents pure athleticism. He represents beer and pizza like the rest.
And in closing, as I know we want to get back to the other subjects, we do have some callers on that, and thanks for holding through all this, guys. Yes. Much appreciated. Do you get the sneaking, I got a bad feeling about this, that I've been having now for the last hour or so? He's going to go six innings and give up
yes.
two runs, and the Twins are going to win tonight. Just you watch. That or the Indians will bomb him through three innings or something.
I might have thought that had last night not happened.
Ooh, good call.
Because you know what? The offenses for the Indians are starting to break out a little bit. Jay Bruce has provided some pop. Maybe that's been a little bit of inspiration to get Edwin Encarnacion going, who hit the two bombs last night. You know, Austin Jackson with the huge go-ahead shot a couple of nights ago against the Rays. You know what? They're starting to swing the bats. The pitching is exceptional almost every night. Who starts tonight?
Salazar for the Indians.
The pitching, since he came back, he's been exceptional. We already went through Kluber since June 1st when he came off the DL. He has been maybe the best pitcher in all of baseball.
Yeah, that's been one or two of our Buffalo Wild Wings stats.
Trevor Bauer, last night's winner, has won, what, four starts in a row, I want to say, and he's been terrific for three of the four and pretty good in the other one. Carrasco had a couple of stumbles, but through a seven-inning, I want to say, no-hitter. He took a no-hitter into the seventh, his last start. And won in dominating fashion also against the Rays. Basically, every pitcher is dealing, and they're starting to swing the sticks. So, Bartolo, don't get too comfortable on the hill tonight, because quite frankly, Jimmy, I might have thought what you thought until last night, as they just seem to be really hitting a groove right now.
Fair point.
So we'll see where that goes. Okay, I want to get back to the Colin Kaepernick, Marshawn Lynch, Michael Bennett national anthem story. And quite frankly, it's less of the former and more of the latter two that are the lead figures in the story now, because it was Marshawn Lynch who sat down eating during the national anthem of the Raiders' first preseason game, and Michael Bennett of the Seahawks did the exact same thing. Lynch refuses to talk to the media to explain it. Michael Bennett did explain it, said a lot of it had to do with Charlottesville, which is a story I will not discuss. Here, it's a sports show. So let's confine this to the sports side of this. If you've got a bone to pick with something in culture and society today, is disrespecting the national anthem and the flag that represents the liberty that gives you that you have in order to make that statement, is that the right time and place to do it? Roger Goodell, as you heard in the opening montage of this hour, said no, that's the wrong time to do it.
The national anthem is a special moment to me. It's a point of pride. But we also have to understand the other side, that people do have rights. We want to respect those. I was with the Jets.
By the way, I agree with him. I respect their right to do it. I personally wish they would not. I personally think it's wrong, and I think it's disgusting. But I respect their right to be disgusting. That's America. I don't want anybody arresting Colin Kaepernick or Michael Bennett or Marshawn Lynch for doing that. That would mean they don't have rights in this country. You do have rights. But you also have the decision to make, a choice to make, as to when is the right time to exercise that right. And that's what Goodell discusses here.
I was with the Jets a few weeks ago, and one of the players was there, and they said, you know, there's a time and a place. That's what we all have to sort of understand, the responsibility of doing it the right time and in the right way. And what we see is a lot of our players going in the community and really taking the platform they have and being active.
Awesome. Love that. That's the way to do it, and that's the time and the place to do it. Go into the community. Have a meeting. Call an event. Say you're going to give a speech. Go on television and go into a talk show. Have those things at those times. That is a great way to do it.
And creating dialogue and actually making really positive change. And that's what I think is so important. Protest to progress is what I call it. And we all have to recognize that people want to see change. Let's go out and try to make that change happen in a peaceful and an important way.
At the right and appropriate time. And that is, I think, a message that more and more people are starting to try to get across. Let's do this thing at the right time and place. It's kind of like, and I'll go to the calls after this. I don't go to a football game to have a political statement made. I don't go to a rock concert to have a political statement either. You know what I mean? And maybe I'm a little bit older because I don't go to too many concerts anymore. But if I'm going to see Bruce Springsteen, I want to hear the songs. I don't want to hear your opinion of this vote, that issue, this congressional legislation, that one, your opinion of this candidate or that one. If I go and see, I'm not much of a country fan, but if I go to see, pick a famous country guy.
You're asking me. I'm not really.
You're not a country fan either.
No, I'm not. That'd be an exercise in futility right there.
I don't want to go to a concert of any kind. I don't care if it's a rap show, a country show, a classic rock artist, or a boy band like One Direction. I don't want to hear politics. I want to hear them sing. Same thing at a football game. I want to hear the national anthem. We're all free in this country, and we're glad to be so. Now let's play football. I don't want to get into political debates with my neighbors because somebody supports Kaepernick, somebody opposes Kaepernick. It's just the wrong time and place. And that's kind of why so many people like Goodell and even the Browns coach Hugh Jackson is saying, kind of don't want to see that around here.
I think everybody has a right to do, you know, and I get it, but the national anthem means a lot to myself personally, an organization or a football team. I hope, you know, again, I can't speak. I haven't really talked to our team about it. I would hope we don't have those issues. I understand there's a lot going on in the world. I like to just keep it here. You know, what we deal with, we try to deal with as a team.
I think it's a great message. That is exactly what I hope most teams do. Has Jim Caldwell spoken out on this, to your knowledge?
Not that I have heard.
It's interesting to hear Hugh Jackson.
Right.
And I told you I heard former coach Rob Ryan, former defense coordinator Rob Ryan, earlier today speaking on this. He kind of says the same thing. It's like, look, we all have rights, and everybody is fine to have whatever opinion you want. But you know what? That's the national anthem.
Yeah.
And that's our flag. And that represents countless numbers of lives. Countless amounts of blood lost by patriots to give this country, to give you the freedom that you have in this country. And it's just so incredibly disrespectful for that anthem and that flag to be treated in such a way. As Rob Ryan said, you know what, I love you and support your right to feel however you want and to do whatever you want, but I wish people would not do it in that way. And I think there's a lot of people who feel the same way. Jimmy's in Toledo. on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Let's see what he has to say about all this. Hey, Jimmy, go ahead.
Well, you got to be careful about being a patriot now, Bob. Somebody could call you a nationalist. How dare you put your country first?
That's a very, very interesting thing. And you know what? I'm okay with being a nationalist. Not a white
nationalist.
You're damn
right.
Not a white nationalist, not a black nationalist, not somebody that puts one race over another, but put America over other countries, yeah, I'll take that.
Okay, and I'll agree with you. Now, here's the thing. Real quick about sports, Nolan Ryan was throwing some heat, and he was bringing it after the age of, what, 42? I think he was hitting 100 on the gun.
44, wasn't he?
44? I mean, he's the one I always think of doing
Holy
ridiculous
cow.
Things. He never lost his heat.
How did I forget about Noli? I think you're right. I think he was 44 when he was still dealing. And
he was dealing heat,
his
man.
46. Year with the Rangers was age 46 in 1993. I think 44 in 91 is when he threw his final no hit.
That's right.
Yeah.
44 when he threw his last no no.
So he was like the king of all of that. I mean, Bartolo's kicking it, but Nolan Ryan was dominating, and that's why I always laugh when everybody's like, oh. And Justin's a young man, for God's sake. Justin's 34. He could throw his heat for another 8 years and still not even be close to where Nolan was. So everybody out there, just relax, man.
You know what? That dude was a freak of nature.
Yes, he was, because he had great mechanics.
One of my favorite athletes, not just players in baseball, but athletes of all time. And thank you for the reminder. I feel like just a knob for not remembering Nolan Ryan at 46 was still dealing, and at 44 when he threw that last no-no. That's crazy.
That's all right. I brought up the Austin Jackson catch, so I got 2 out of 3 now.
You're doing well.
Now, listen, I got something for that Ron guy. You gave him a pat on the back for being belligerent and smug, and I guess maybe I'm that way once in a while. But
I don't want to be a jerk. I don't want to be a jerk to somebody just because they're being jerk-like to me. You know?
Yeah, mine's always in good fun. I told you, we agree more. You and I just usually disagree over like little subtleties. We usually agree on most of it.
Yeah, I hear you. And you're a good debater. I told you that's why I like when you call, because you're a good guy to debate.
I think I need to bring up a article for you out there, Ron, hopefully you're still listening. There was a fellow, it's a young, noted, black, economist from Harvard, and we all know Harvard isn't exactly, the bastion of conservatism. And he's a fairly young guy too. He's accomplished. His name's Professor Roland G. Fryer. And he's a professor of economics, and he was, sympathetic to the cause. And this was back when, Black Lives Matter was out there assassinating cops. And remember now, the score is like 12-1 out there. And for those people who want to keep score, sad.
Which I don't, by the way.
No, and I don't either, but you can imagine what it is.
But I do know the study you're referring to by the Harvard economist.
Yeah, so let's have him look that up, because this young man, he looked up and he did this study where he did the looked over 1,000 different shootings over 10 major departments from Texas to California, all across the country, okay, so there would be no bias in region.
Right.
And he came up and, quote, in his own words, quote, the most surprising result of his own career. And he found that the study, though, it showed that there was bias as far as blacks and the way they're treated, like with pepper spray and handcuffed and, being pulled over. When it came to the most brutal and lethal forms of lethal force, that the study showed absolutely no racial bias whatsoever when it came to actual shootings. And in fact, black officers were actually found to shoot white people at a higher rate than white cops would shoot black assailants. That's a fact.
Jerry. I might have to call part of that into question because I remember the study from last summer. It was last year that we got this. I didn't know that part of it had I didn't know the race of the cop was a part of that. I thought they just found what this African American professor at Harvard found was that just cops in general were more likely to shoot white assailants or suspects in identical situations than they were black suspects.
Well, and the theory was that maybe some with the atmosphere, and you've seen it in Baltimore, and it's actually across the entire stratum of police that now police are just basically starting to become reluctant enforcing the law at all.
Not just starting to. That's been going on for at least 2 years.
Right, since this whole thing. Yeah. So it's very important when these athletes start making these protests, and I like we've talked before, they have a right to do whatever they want and say whatever they want, and that's what's very there's no such thing as hate speech. We may find speech objectionable and hateful and despicable, but the fact of the matter is the First Amendment exists to protect exactly that speech.
Right.
And the fact is we don't have the right to beat people up and to bring clubs and bottles of urine to throw at people that are peaceably assembling to redress their grievances, regardless of what we disagree with their grievance. And this is what's going on in this country, and it's been going on. And so when you get an athlete that goes out there, no matter what he thinks he's doing, how misguided he is, he has no right to use the NFL platform to do that.
Well,
and
that's
then,
not true, Jimmy. He does, until the NFL says you don't. You know, the NBA requires you to stand for the national anthem. If you don't, you are fined, and then they'll keep fining you 82 times if that's what it takes. Major League Baseball requires you to stand along the baselines or in the bullpen if you're there for the national anthem. The NFL does not have that requirement. So technically speaking, the employer here, which is the National Football League, does not require him. I mean, they do give him the opportunity to use that platform if he so chooses. However, in doing so, they also give each individual owner the right, as Colin and others have the right to do this, the right to say whether or not they want that guy on their team representing their franchise with their name across that jersey. And if they don't want you to, that is a part of, you know, the rights given to a free country as well.
Conduct unbecoming. Yeah, I mean, you have the right to do what Colin Kaepernick is doing as a citizen. I've never ever said that he doesn't have the right to do that. However, you have your employer and I have my employer. We have the right to free speech, but we can't just go in our employer and say whatever the hell we want. They could throw us out.
Exactly. Because,
and that's my problem with when athletes do these things and they're wearing the uniform or the platform or the brand of a league, they're affecting the bottom line of that league and their employer, and they don't necessarily have the right to do that without some consequences coming down on them. And then when you add in the public, who's the consumer, then it's a whole nother can of worms. So
because that's that at the end of the day is what the owners will base their decision on. Do we want to deal with all of the above? Based on whether or not the fans will you know, what kind of a backlash they will give us. And if the guy's good enough, if he's a stud, if he's a star, they will say, come on in, we'll deal with the fans. They'll love you when you throw that
you know
touchdown
pass.
You know something,
though? I think in this case, and I'm actually going to disagree with you on this.
Right.
I think because this is unprecedented, what happened last year to the TV ratings, to where they had to start actually giving back commercials to advertisers. They've never in the history of the NFL had to do that, except maybe when they had the scabs plan back in the day when the replacement players, where they actually had to give back advertisers like replacement commercials to make up for the ratings. And that's never happened. And that is a direct result of the kind of nonsense that was going on.
I still say, though, that if he was better, if he was going to throw 35 touchdown passes this year,
I don't
know. Deal with the fan backlash. Somebody would sign him and say,
but you got to worry about.
You're going to cheer this guy. You might boo him during the anthem when he's sitting, but you're going to cheer him when he throws that fourth quarter game winner.
Well, what happens if, you know, what happens if you get him in the locker room and you get a locker room divided? And I'm telling you, that's
no,
death
I know,
to a
I
team.
No, I know, but I'm still, you know what? You might be right, I might be right. I don't know, but I'm telling you.
We will
you,
never know.
All of those things, all
about.
Of those things, though. I mean, let's look at it this way. Look at it this way. The Eagles brought Michael Vick back. We know that he was just public enemy number one in the sporting world after he went to after the whole thing, when he was convicted, then went to prison, everything else. You know how many people said, not in my town. Animal lovers, animal rights groups going crazy. But
sure.
Eagles thought the dude could still play. If he could still be that lightning fast guy with the laser arm that he was with Atlanta when he signed the $100 million contract 2 years before, they said it's worth it for us to deal with the backlash. And likewise, if Colin Kaepernick threw the ball like Aaron Rodgers, they would say the same thing now. We'll deal with the locker room. We'll deal with the fan base if the dude can still do it. And that's
I would agree. I would agree a little more to that, except I don't think when Michael Vick went out, he was at the apex of his career, and he was like a superstar. And Colin Kaepernick had that flash in the pan, and he got to a Super Bowl. But truthfully, he'd been out of the he really had kind of fallen from grace by the time this all happened. And I don't think there was just that fascination with his career as when watching Michael Vick fall from the heights that he was at when that whole situation came out. I don't think anybody thought, well, wow, I think the situations are similar, but I think they're still different enough to warrant, you know, I mean, I could see the comparison, but I don't think they're the same.
Fair enough, my friend.
All right, Jimmy, brother, man.
Stuff. I got to run, brother. Great
Take
call.
It easy.
I always appreciate your debate and your discussion. There's Jimmy in Toledo. By the way, my favorite part of that conversation, Kushlin, is still Nolan Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel bad, too, that I forgot Nolan. All about him as well.
Oh, my God. You know, I feel so stupid because last year, when David Ortiz was having what might have been an MVP year, what did he hit, 38 last year?
I'm triple-checking, but that sounds right.
In his last season, he had 38 home runs. His announced last season, he had 38 home runs and 10 RBIs. And might have
actually,
been...
it was 127, and it led the league. He also led the league in doubles last year. Unreal at 40 years old.
I remember saying on this program, Jim, this might be the greatest performance of a non-cheat, like, you know, Barry Bonds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the age of 40 that I've ever seen in baseball.
It was
MVP worthy.
Yeah, it was certainly one of the greatest final years of somebody's career, and I know we went into that a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But I remember talking about and looking for somebody else who might have been this good at 40, and I just maybe it's because I stopped my search at 40, and didn't look at beyond 40 because Nolan Ryan throwing a no-no at 44 and pitching into his 46th year for crying out loud, easily the benchmark. That's the standard bearer for tremendous success into your 40s. I can't believe I blew that. Okay, and oh, by the way, I guess even though it's a different animal altogether because of the athleticism required or not, Jack Nicklaus won the green jacket for the sixth time at the age of 46, just to throw that in there as another part of the conversation.
Oh, that's right. That was age 46, wasn't it?
It was. It was in 1986, and he was 46. It was my senior year of high school that Jack Nicklaus did that. Okay, we're a little bit late here for our bottom of the hour Sports Center. And you know what else I want to do before Sports Center? I want to give you a look at our ticket sweet deal of the week. It's a four-pack of tickets to the Splash Universe in Dundee. Log on to 1065theticket.com tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. You can get a four-pack of tickets to Splash Universe for just $35. That's $128 value for $35. But if you want one for $0, be caller number 5 right now, 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, and we'll set you up with a four-pack to Splash Universe in Dundee. Then we'll get our Sports Center, and we'll come right back after this.
Back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, then. Kyle Vogel of Perrysburg was our sweet deal winner, so congratulations. He's got the four-pack of passes to Splash Universe in Dundee. And don't forget, you can get one of those for just $35 tomorrow morning starting at 9 o'clock on our website, 1065theticket.com, while supplies last. Kush, we didn't talk, we didn't talk at all today about the NBA schedule that is out, which means we didn't talk at all about the NBA at all. I want to just kind of throw this in there toward the end of the show. We've only got a few minutes left. But reports are that the Cavaliers have not made a deal for Kyrie Irving yet because they are hell-bent on getting a young superstar in return, not a Chris Paul type. Not saying Chris Paul's in play here, but a few days ago we talked about how if Kyrie Irving had made this trade request a month earlier, Chris Paul, of course, who was tradable by the Clippers, who did so with the Rockets, might have been able to do a perfect swap there. CP3 and LeBron James are great friends, would have been really, really something special there. And Kyrie can go and play Lob City with Griffin. But anyway, they don't want necessarily an established guy like that. They want a young star, and the reason why, as always, uncertainty created by the fickle, I'll do what I want, when I want, as long as it's good for me and nobody else, LeBron James. He refuses to tell Dan Gilbert or even head coach Tyronn Lue, refuses to tell the organization what his plans are after this season. And so since they don't know if they're going to lose him again, they want to guarantee that they get a young star to build around. In the event that Kyrie is now gone and LeBron James is now gone, Kevin Love would still be here theoretically for at least another year. What do? We build around another young star. And that's why, according to a separate report at CBS, Kristaps Porzingis is the guy. That's the target in trade talks. Kristaps Porzingis and Kyrie Irving could be on new teams next season if the Cavs are able to pull off this stunning trade. Irving is, I'm reading from CBS Sports, has requested a trade from the Cavs. One of his most preferred destinations is the Knicks, which I still don't get. I really don't, other than the fact that he's a little bit Madison Avenue, you know, with the Uncle Drew marketing campaign with Pepsi, and he's just that kind of a star. I can see him wanting that spotlight. But from a competitive standpoint, they suck. And with Carmelo Anthony moving, probably, because, you know, they're trying to get that done. He wants to go to Houston, and those talks have opened back up again. Porzingis would be gone. Anthony would be gone. Who the hell is Kyrie going to play with? I mean, you're talking about a lottery team immediately. But this is one of the things he has said. The Knicks would be a destination for him. And according to ES, well, how about this? This is CBS quoting ESPN. According to ESPN, the player Cleveland is targeting is Porzingis. The Cavs would have to take on Joakim Noah's big contract to make that happen. And then Porzingis reportedly is a non-starter in the trade discussions at the moment, but that's why there is no movement on the Cavs' trade front, because they want Porzingis, and the Knicks are not going to allow that to happen, at least for now. Quoting ESPN, Porzingis has emerged as a primary Cleveland target, but that's a conversation that can only occur with Cleveland's willingness to unburden the Knicks of the 3 years and $55 million left on Joakim Noah's deal. For now, the conversation is a non-starter for the Knicks, league sources said. After Porzingis passed on exit interviews last season because of frustrations with the team, the Knicks briefly shopped him before Phil Jackson was run. Porzingis has not been involved in any other rumors since then, and the assumption is that he would remain in New York. However, other teams are wondering how long that will remain the case, with him still maintaining some distance from the organization. Quoting from ESPN again, for the right all-star player, though, Irving or otherwise, multiple NBA teams are seriously questioning how emphatic of a no it would be for the Knicks. There continues to be a distance between Porzingis and the organization, and how the Knicks truly value Porzingis' future could become clear once they're together to begin the season. The Knicks seem to be locked in on keeping him. However, that if that reported tension still exists when training camp begins, it might reopen trade talks. For now, it appears the Cavs need to find a different young name to target. How do you feel about it, Kush? If it was to come to pass, if this is all just, you know, New York saying no, 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 in order to drive things up, take on the Noah contract, throw in somebody else besides Kyrie Irving, et cetera, et cetera. How would you feel about a Porzingis with Cleveland? You know, you've kind of already got a Porzingis type of player in Kevin Love, if we can make that comparison.
Well, in theory, you know, in such a situation, one would have to think that in the long run, in that case, Love would probably get traded too. My first initial thought when trying to sift through all this, because I saw some of the same things the last 24 hours you did on this, is that, well, this makes sense, because how many times have we said since the end of the season, end of the finals, and then, of course, even more so after this story about Kyrie came out now about a month ago, how many times did we more or less say, well, if you're Dan Gilbert, you have to make sure you're in a position that when he leaves again, that you're not a 65-loss team again, you know, and how they have to put some things in place for a post-LeBron situation.
Well, assume automatically that Kevin Love would be traded?
Quite frankly,
also,
I think it's a dereliction of duty for whoever's up in that front office now to not plan for it that way.
Why?
Because I personally feel you have to play with the assumption that he's going to be gone.
And you can't about Love?
No, LeBron.
I don't understand. Obviously, that's what preceded this discussion. LeBron leaving. That's why they're insisting on a young star,
right?
Not an established star, somebody who's young that they can sign long term and build around, which is what you know the bill that Porzingis fits.
Right.
You stated that Kevin Love would be traded too, and I'm trying to figure out why.
Oh, because you throw out an interesting concept. Say they were to actually pull this off down the line and get Porzingis from the Knicks in such a deal. You're correct. They kind of already have that type of player in Love, so you'd have two of the same player there. That's the only reason I threw
in
that.
In a manner
that
of speaking,
part.
It just depends on you know what kind of a rotation you want.
Yes.
Because he's 7'3". You know, Love is a 7-footer, 6'11" anyway. He's a jump shooter. Now Porzingis can score face up as well. He's a great face up shooter as well. But he's also you know a center essentially by position. Love would still be a power forward. I think you could still play those two guys together. You need a small forward, obviously. That's where LeBron, of course, would be vacating. I'm not saying they could not play together. As a matter of fact, you know, if you had Porzingis and lost another all-star like Love, now you're talking about trading away all of the – well, trading two of the big three, losing LeBron in a free agency situation where all three of the big three leave at the same time, and Porzingis comes in to be what? To be the centerpiece of a 60-loss team. I don't think he'd want to be that. I don't think they would want to do that. I think they would want to bring him in while still keeping some of the talented players that they have, including Kevin Love, including J.R. Smith, you know, and other guys that would be, you know, great complementary fits for him.
Now, that's a good point to bring up, and I'll go back on kind of what I said, because, you know, I kind of forget, you know, sometimes I kind of forget that he probably would play center in that kind of a lineup with Love.
I mean,
but either
in
way.
In a 2017 center. I'm not saying he'd be a back-to-the-basket Patrick
Old
Ewing.
School, good point. In closing, real quick, for me, this is the right move for the Cavs, though. Or how they have to approach this.
Yes.
You have to almost assume there won't be a LeBron, so you need to get younger, more controllable guys to bring back so you're not immediately a 65-loss team.
Well, I already assume there's not going to be any LeBron, and that's why Kyrie Irving is doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be left as the best player on this team, where if they fail to go to the finals, he is automatically ridiculed couldn't do it without LeBron, huh?
And this story more or less confirms that the front office is thinking that, too.
Of course it does. Absolutely. They know full well that LeBron is going to bail, and that's why Kyrie wants out of town first so he doesn't left here to be compared to LeBron and whether or not they could win. He could win in Cleveland without LeBron, and the team knows he's going to leave, too, which is why they're insisting on a young, talented player that they can sign to a long-term contract like a Porzingis in order to build around. So that's where we'll have to leave it. All right, just had to get a little bit of NBA there. We did a lot of NFL. In baseball today, so why not throw some NBA in to wrap it up? All right, tomorrow coming up on the Extravaganza, we're going to talk a little bit more about the fight. You realize that tomorrow puts us 10 days away from Mayweather-McGregor. It's a show. It's not a fight. It's an event, not a boxing match, but it's got our attention. And a few different developments have come about in the last couple of days that deserve our discussion and conversation, and we will do that as part of tomorrow's Extravaganza. For now, stay where you are, because coming up next, it's Mike Miller and Drive Time right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.